Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Damage Report, another week of news at the TYT Network, and this is going to be a momentous week where the future of so many different issues is going to be determined. I say that a lot and generally I'm lying, but this time it's definitely true because it is go time for the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. Will we be able to stop him with no political power whatsoever? We're gonna give it the old college try. By we, I mean, I guess everybody, but also me. Jai DeRola, and also Brooke Thomas, who's in studio, it's not a Monday.
Even though it's not a Monday. It's our Monday.
It's like a Monday.
Yeah. When the week starts late, what day do you skip? If Tuesday's your Monday.
I don't know.
Wednesday, I guess.
It feels like a super Monday because we had a 3-day week, of course, or a 3-day weekend. Of course, it was Labor Day, which it's odd. I both obviously don't want to do a show there because I want to respect, you know, Labor Day. But I also feel like I want to talk about Labor Day.
Right.
But I want to talk about it on Labor Day generally. Anyway, we've got a lot that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about Brett Kavanaugh. We're going to be talking about Nike's new contract with Colin Kaepernick and how it has set the country on fire and set shoes on fire. We'll be talking about that. And then most importantly, like, you're going to want to stick around because we're going to be having an extended conversation with Nina Turner, president of Our Revolution, you know, amongst all of her other obvious accolades and positions. And we're going to be talking about her podcast, We the People, which is on the TYT Network. But we're also going to be talking about the midterm elections, about the Democrats' strategy, about their chances, and about some of the high profile candidates that have come out of this primary season. And then we're joined by another awesome guest, James Cromwell, actor and environmental activist, is going to be joining us to talk about California's push to become the second 100% renewable energy state. We're close to that mark. And then we're also going to look back over a year of environmental policy coming out of Donald Trump's White House. So you're not going to want to miss that either. I'm very glad that you're joining me today for this.
I'm glad to be here.
It's always good to have you here. So why don't we jump right into Brett Kavanaugh.
Okay, let's do it.
So this is Donald Trump's second nominee for the Supreme Court, because why shouldn't he get more than is historically the norm? Now, Brett Kavanaugh is a complicated figure. He is obviously an extreme right winger. He was very highly placed on all those lists that go around at places like the Heritage Foundation and right wing ideologues and all of that. Now, I saw a preview of his opening remarks, which you have seen before, but not delivered by him, delivered by every single person that's ever tried to get onto the Supreme Court. And that is, I will be a neutral arbiter. An umpire. I have no preference for one sort of law or philosophy. I just, you know, I want to tell it like it is, call it like I see it. Do you believe that? Do you believe that on issues like Roe v. Wade, the continuation of that, that he's simply going to, you know, follow established precedent and then rule in a fair and neutral way?
It seems weird. This has happened before in these confirmation hearings. Someone saying everything about their history before they sit down in that chair is, I don't like this. I want this repealed. I'm not into this. All of my rulings are going to circumvent what is there. But now that I'm here in front of you, I'm going to respect. No, what? And then essentially, it's so weird because even saying it like that acts as if your job could not potentially be changing. Mm-hmm. Creating a new precedent. Like, does that make sense? So it seems weird.
The hope is that, I think, obviously to people like us who pay attention to this, that sort of transition that you just described doesn't actually make any sense. Right. I think the hope is that it will provide plausible deniability to some people in the news to make the case, well, look, he's saying all of these great things. They're paid to be fooled by that sort of thing. Imagine being a paid fool in that way. And then also for some people, you know, who don't pay attention to the news quite a bit, they'll see that one headline, you know, I'm just going to be a fair umpire. And they'll think, oh, well, you know, maybe he won't be so bad.
Do you know,
but we know him.
What's fascinating to me about this is that those statements, they actually, because, so let's just pick the Republican side. The people who, we know who's already going to vote to confirm him. They're good.
Apparently
they don't
everybody,
care what he says.
It seems,
but then
like
the other side, that's those statements, that's usually their scapegoat to why they let things go through, why we didn't fight this. Well, he said this, she said this. So that's fascinating.
And that is a perfectly justifiable fear, because it appears that there is potentially some sort of split amongst the Democrats where they're not sure if this is the one that they should fight. Well, then just leave your position, okay? Because if you don't know an enemy when you see one at this point, I don't know how you ever got into elected office in the first place. Now, that does not mean that there weren't some fireworks in the early moments of this confirmation hearing. I mean, we're a morning show, obviously, so it is just starting. But we want to play a bit of video from how it started.
This confirmation hearing on the nomination of
Mr.
Judge
Chairman
Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend a very warm welcome to Judge Kavanaugh.
We have not been given an opportunity.
Of course. So thank you to Kamala Harris for referencing those. If we could bring up this headline, you're going to see Washington Post also talking about those 42,000 pages of documents, which seems insane that there could be that many. By the way, this is not all the documents that have been requested. Over 100,000 pages have been requested. They waited until last night to release these. And by the way, not release them as in you can look over them. Only the Judiciary Committee is going to be able to temporarily look at them. They're still classified and all that. But there's like 60,000 that they're just like, no, we're never going to let you see these.
And that right there, the reason it's important, obviously, why she's bringing it up, in the case of like a trial, defense attorneys like to call that dumping, because it's usually a strategy from the prosecution to circumvent discovery. We have to give you all of this, so we're going to give it to you in a way that it is just going to be impossible for you to read it and get something out of it and do something with it in time to properly defend your client. And in this case, would be the American people, would be the client.
Yeah. And it would be awesome, by the way, if we could just have an actual discussion. You know, we have multiple sides of the aisle or whatever. You know, we want to like take a look at the documents, see what's in there, and then have a debate about what he said and what he's done. And the other side thinks, you know what, he's our guy. We like the things that he's said. But we know that that's not the actual conversation we're having. They didn't reveal 60,000 of these documents. They only revealed 42,000 the night before, not because they're so confident about his record and the judicial ideals he's stood for, but because obviously they're horrified of things that are in that record. He worked under George W. Bush. We know that his stance on issues like whether presidents should have any legal repercussions whatsoever for criminal wrongdoing when they're in office is on the wrong side of history. Certainly it's on a beneficial side for Donald Trump now. God only knows what's in those documents, and God might be the only one who knows in time to actually do something about it because of this insane, anti-democratic, underhanded judicial tactic from the White House here in dumping these documents, making it impossible effectively for anyone to actually know anytime soon what's in them. And because of that, we might have Brett Kavanaugh, not for the length of the Trump presidency, but you could have another term of Trump and then one of Don Jr. and then two of Ivanka and one of Barron, and we'd still have Brett Kavanaugh at the end of it.
One of Barron,
Give him one. He seems like a good kid.
Yeah.
He'll be middle-aged at that point, but we'll still have Brett Kavanaugh, and he will be shredding labor rights and shredding the environment and making sure the presidents are protected from any investigation of what they do. Forget about corruption. We're having this debate about whether we can actually fight against corruption right now. You won't even know that it's going on in future years, thanks to people like Brett Kavanaugh reshaping the Supreme Court in that direction. Now, we do have other issues we have to press on to. We're going to be coming back to Kavanaugh over the course of this week, but I do want to talk about Colin Kaepernick, because we had two pieces of news. Last week, an arbitrator ruled that Colin Kaepernick's collusion grievance against the NFL could go forward. That was certainly not good news for the NFL. More bad news for them. Nike has made him one of the faces of their new Just Do It anniversary campaign. If we could bring up this tweet, you'll see an incredibly retweeted tweet that Colin Kaepernick put out saying, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. And that quote is tailor-made to accomplish two goals. One, to inspire people who actually have difficult lives. And two, to enrage every right-winger in the country.
It's not the intention.
Ben Shapiro's face melted when he read that. What has he sacrificed? He has sacrificed something, actually. His career, effectively. His name in the face of many people. And many other people, thankfully, have stood alongside him or knelt alongside him in this case. But on the other side, there is little they despise more in this country than the peaceful protest of an African-American social justice warrior, or whatever you want to call it at this point. So what do you think about Nike starting this partnership?
I think what's fascinating to me about this is that this had been somewhat of a secret all along, that this is kind of, I guess, the final step in announcing this campaign. And this is good for someone who lost his dream fighting for people who didn't have as much as him.
Yeah.
So there's that. Also, Nike is a major company, something that a lot of people who are protesting this announcement seem to not understand. They're a massive company, and we have seen massive companies make huge mistakes. Mm-hmm. Nike doesn't so often do that. Mm-hmm. And this, they know that Colin Kaepernick is a very polarizing figure these days. Whether you like him or not, there are people on both sides for whatever ridiculous, you know, reasoning they mm-hmm. may have to not like him. There's a yeah. large group of people who don't like him and don't want anything good to happen to him. And Nike knows that. This is well thought out. I think the idea that people who are cutting the Nike swoosh off of their socks seem to think that this is, you know, we're surprising this massive company. But, you know, no. And I think if someone pointed this out, and I thought about it and did a little research on this, Nike is...
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Focused on, this is the 30th anniversary of this campaign. Mm-hmm. And Nike is focused very obviously on fans and customers in the next 30 years, not the past 30 years. Yeah. And when you think about that, that reminds you of teenagers, young sneakerheads. They like, in LA, they call them hype beast. And they like Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, you're really proud that you knew what a hype beast is?
Hype beast is my real name, actually. John Hype Beast Iderola. I can barely get through that.
But these are the fans that...
Yeah, the older people are protesting the NFL. They're wearing New Balance anyway.
Right.
They're not wearing the Nikes.
Or talking about how they would rather wear their Converse than Nike and don't even realize a hype beast knows mm-hmm. that Nike also owns Converse.
As we all know.
See, we all know.
Yes.
But, so, you know, and also this is not the first time recently that Nike has been a part of a social justice campaign. Look what they just did with Serena.
Oh, yeah, that's
just
true.
This was just days ago, you know?
Yeah, and they're showing a willingness to stand beside these inspirational figures, mm-hmm. even if there's the threat of some sort of protest. It won't actually come. Like, the idea that Nike's stock is going to tank is ridiculous. Yeah. And if you're burning your shoes, if you're willing to bloody your feet walking barefoot to make the libs cry, you're a moron, okay? You already paid for the shoes. They've got your right. money. And by the way, if this is all about the vets to you, because you can look at all of these people who are telling you very clearly what they're protesting about, and you say, no, you're lying, you just hate the military, then give your stupid sneakers to a vet, you morons.
Because there are a lot
Don't
of them.
Don't burn them.
Yeah.
God, they're so stupid. Can we just put up really fast a second yeah. image? Jordan, a friend on Twitter, he tweeted out, in true American fashion, "I just drone striked my Nike shoes," an animation of a drone strike hitting it. And many of these morons are so stupid that they tweeted at him, "You could have killed someone in your apartment complex." They thought he drone struck his shoes. Our country has lost its mind. And we know what is driving this opposition to people like Colin Kaepernick and against this social movement. It's economic anxiety. No, it's racism. It's obviously
it's
racism, you fools.
Anxiety. Always.
Okay, I wish.
But listen, Nike knows where the money is at. The money is with young people who want to fight for civil rights.
Yes.
The money is with young people who like these massive figures, like LeBron, like Serena, like Colin Kaepernick, who are standing up
yeah.
and using their voice for people who don't have as much as them.
Even at risk to their own wealth and
exactly.
career.
Exactly, and that's where the exactly. money is. This is a business. This is a business. This is a Nike executive saying, you know what? Black Lives, this is a business. Yeah. And the money is with the people who agree with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, yeah. Take it up with capitalism.
Right.
Anyway, we do have to go to our first break, though. When we come back, we'll be joined by Nina Turner. We're going to be talking about her podcast, also breaking down these midterms. How much hope do we have and should we have after this? There are a few people better placed to join the show and help us break down this political situation we find ourselves in these midterms than Nina Turner. And I'm very excited to welcome her to the show right now. Nina is not only the president of Our Revolution, professor, she's also the host of We the People, one of the newest podcasts on the TYT Audio Network. Welcome to the show, Nina.
Thanks, John. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you on. So there's a lot of topics that I want to talk with you about. But on the show, we were just speaking about Nike's new partnership with Colin Kaepernick and some of the protests against that. How do you react to the way that many Americans have greeted Nike working with Colin Kaepernick?
It's very disappointing. It's very ridiculous. I know that they're burning Nike gear. I saw one, John, you probably saw this one, where this guy cut out, you know, cut holes in his Nike gear and put it on like he was wearing a KKK hood.
Oh, I missed that.
You know, it's just disgusting. And it's just one more reminder that this country does specialize in racism and bigotry, that we have some demons in this country that we need to really deal with. We do need a truth and reconciliation, you know, similar to what they did in South Africa. And it certainly is not that all is well in South Africa, but at least at first, you know, when President Nelson Mandela was taken over, they did have the courage to say we do need to have truth and reconciliation. We have never had that in this country. We pretend as if we have overcome racism and bigotry and discrimination, and we have not. So I am the PG version of what I'm able to say on your show, since it's a daytime show, is that I am very disappointed that some Americans would choose to do that over Colin Kaepernick, who is really a modern day freedom fighter, in my opinion.
Now, so look, obviously, as you point out, we've had these racial problems, including, you know, institutionalized racism, laws, Jim Crow, police brutality, all this lynching, you know, all of that.
Yes.
And now we have, it's very out in front, like we have literal Nazis marching. Donald Trump appears to have emboldened some of these people, but he's really playing on a history that we've had since before the United States was even a country. If we were to be able to snap our fingers and get rid of Donald Trump, how much, if at all, do you think that would actually help America in dealing with some of these racial issues?
It wouldn't help much, John. I mean, I think for us, and you hit the nail on the head, Jim Crow, you know, slavery itself, black codes, and we're talking about institutional racism, and sometimes people don't get that. We're not just talking about one individual that is a bigot. We're talking about within the systems in this country, socially, politically, economically. We're talking about systemic racism. But if President Trump went away, it may make some folks feel comfortable that the symbol itself, i.e., the colored water fountain, if you will, and the white water fountain is not staring us in our face. But what is happening under the presidency of Donald Trump is that we're forced to come face to face with the fact that those demons, the demons of race and bigotry, still plague this country, even though generation after generation, we certainly have made progress. But it was very easy when you have presidents and other leaders who don't embrace that, for us to think as a country that we have really overcome. We have overcome a little, but we have many more miles to go. So it wouldn't really change what is deep seated in the nature of this country, John. And that is the part that I think many leaders are afraid to really deal with. Mr. Trump is a convenient excuse, but when he is gone, what will be our excuse to deal with racism and bigotry when we don't have somebody like him in the White House?
I want to turn back to the midterms and some of the ways that we're trying to change the face of government in just a bit. But also, you're close to 10 episodes in now on your new podcast, We the People. So in that, you say that you focus on the real people who are actually being affected by these policies by speaking with some of the most high profile and influential people in, you know, social justice, politics, art, all of that. What is your goal with your podcast? What are you hoping to achieve with it?
the goal of We the People, I want people to see themselves in We the People. And yes, certainly we start off by having conversations with movers and shakers, whether they're the grass top, so to speak, or the grassroots. It has been a great journey thus far. I mean, I've had people on like Susan Sarandon and Killer Mike, who brought all kinds of cool to the show, John. Just all kinds of cool to the show. To even interviewing Senator Sanders. So it has been really great. I interviewed a high school student who talked about, you know, being able to be at the March for Our Lives. So it's the whole gamut. It's not just the people with the fancy titles. We're talking to everybody. But I do want people to see themselves, and I want folks to believe and to know that ultimately, no matter how daunting situations are, and no matter how daunting situations may look, that the power is really with us, we the people. And if we decide to move, if we decide to be the change, change will happen in this country. So really excited about being on the TYT launch of some pretty incredible podcasts.
Nina, hi, I'm Brooke Thomas here. I want to ask you a question a little bit about yourself. I've seen you described more than once as unapologetically Black, and I think your presence is uplifting for a lot of people, and I've seen that online. I want to know, when it comes to politics, we are in this weird space in our country right now, maybe not necessarily new, but weird. How important is it for you to be just authentically yourself?
Brooke, very important, and thank you for that question. I rarely get questions about myself, but it is vitally important for me to be who I am. I mean, just, you know, when we talk about in the Black community, Black from a distance, you know, that's me. And also the way that I comport myself, the way that I talk, the way that I express, I bring the thunder and the rain and the lightning, you know, just being me. It is important to be able to do that, and I'm really excited that in this country, even though we still have many more miles to go, there has been more of an embrace. Because, Brooke, as you know, because we shared, you know, the same skin, maybe not necessarily totally the same experiences, but we do know that Black women in particular, you know, whether it's our hair that's political, we're angry when we're being assertive, when we do have every right to be mad as hell about a whole bunch of stuff that's going on in this country. But it's refreshing to be able to do that. And, you know, I'm young enough now that I can't be anything else but who I am. And so what I express and what I bring to the world is the fierceness that God has certainly blessed me with.
Nina, if you could stick around, we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, I want to ask you a few questions about how the primaries are going, some of the big victories so far, and what the hopes are coming from the general elections later on this year. See you on the other side. Welcome back to the show, everyone. We're joined once again by Nina Turner, president of Our Revolution. And that is actually what I want to turn to now. The mission of Our Revolution is obviously to have the right sorts of candidates actually win office. And in this primary cycle, we have had a number of really great candidates, some big wins, a few unfortunate and painful losses. But I want to turn to one in particular. So no one has been talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I'll be the one person to actually talk about it. No, but she won. And ever since then, there has been a level of critical analysis of every word that she speaks, every move that she makes, trying to find perceived missteps and things like that. How have you reacted to the hypercritical focus on people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and especially other progressive women?
I've talked to Alexandria and just told her to keep her eye on the prize. You're always going to have haters. Haters going to hate. That's what they do. But she has to stay focused, and she is doing a tremendous job. You know, not only did she win, beat the number four person in the United States Congress on the Democratic side, shook things up in a way that we really needed on the progressive side, but she's also out there helping her other sisters and brothers who have primaries that are, you know, difficult and challenging primaries. As a matter of fact, I'll be going to Delaware tomorrow to help Ms. Harris, who's running for the U.S. Senate, and Ocasio-Cortez has been there. So she just has to keep her eye on the prize and stay focused and not allow people to pull her off her game. You know, we all make mistakes. We all have missteps. We all say, you know, things that we wish we could take back or have phrase it a different way. She is on a mission to lift this country. Her very presence is doing that. And she's not just sitting on her laurels. So I say, as I advise her, forget the haters, just keep focused and serve the people of your district. And by extension, she's serving the citizens of this country. So very proud of her.
Yeah. So far, we have we've been doing live primary coverage, and we'll be doing it later tonight. And we have a running joke that every time another Our Revolution-backed candidate wins, Politico writes another article about how Our Revolution is falling apart. And yes, the crowd is huge and growing. How satisfied are you so far with this primary cycle and the ability of progressive primary challengers to win?
I'm very satisfied, John, and you're right. Speaking of haters, are going to hate Politico, certainly in that category. They won't give us, you know, even if it's one of our candidates, they'll find a way to say that the revolution is dead. But the revolution, the state of the revolution is strong. And as you mentioned, listen, we are going to lose some. So newsflash, when you are challenging establishment candidates, when you are going against the grain, when you are shaking things up, when you are taking risk, when you are the man or the woman in the arena, to give a shout out to President Teddy Roosevelt, oh yeah, you're going to lose some. We just celebrated our second birthday. Happy birthday, Our Revolution. And we are winning almost 50% of our races. And we do take the hard races. You know, as I shared with my team the other day, some people have a smooth surface. Some people have to overcome rocks. Some people got to jump mountains or hills, and other people have to jump mountains. Well, guess the assignment that Our Revolution has taken on? We're jumping mountains, baby. We're mountain jumpers. And with that, we understand our position in the universe. But you know what, John and Brooke, even when our candidates are not necessarily successful in their race in terms of absolutely winning the seat, we are softening the soil for the next progressive so that they will have the courage and also the footprints in the sand, if you will, and they don't have to start from scratch. So I say we win even when our candidates are not successful because we are softening the soil. But baby, we got some real wind under our belts. I mean, when you look at Gillum in Florida, when you look at Abrams in Georgia, and when you look at our very own former Our Revolution board member, Ben Jealous in Maryland, three African-American candidates running for governor going into that general, all backed by Our Revolution. Not when they won, they primary. We didn't come in late like some of these folks. We took the chance with them from the beginning and we believe in them. And so we're shaking things up. You got people like, you know, even in Iowa, we have our Native American sister running there, Miss Jordan. So they're, you know, the diversity, not just the diversity that we can see, you know, it's not just the gender and the phenotype. That's the compliment. But we actually have candidates that when they get that power, they're going to use that power on behalf of the people. They're not afraid to say we need to increase the minimum wage to a living wage. They're not afraid to say, yes, we need Medicare for all. They're not afraid to talk about the injustices in the criminal justice system. They're not afraid to talk about why we need to expand voting rights in this country. Those are the kinds of candidates that we are supporting, John and Brooke, and we are vitally proud of it. So yes, we are mountain jumpers, just in case people don't understand that. And so when people want to measure us, we're taking the risk. We have candidates who are not highly financed. We have candidates that don't have the big connections or the big names. They are running the hard races, and we are proud of them, and we're by their side every step of the way.
Well, look, I know obviously our viewers are going to be really excited for you to be on the show, but I'm going to keep it real. I just have you on to get me fired up. I just need this every once in a while.
Are you fired now, Ray?
I want to cover some primaries right now. I don't know about you. So I want to ask you one other area. So we've got, you know, the primaries, which we're trying to get as many people as possible to pay attention to. But behind the scenes, there's other reforms happening. And we saw that last week with the changes to the superdelegate system in the DNC, some changes around the edges to caucuses. What do you think about the ability of the Unity and Reform Commission to get those changes passed? How excited are you about that?
Barry, and without the push of the grassroots, so let me shout them out, people from all over this country who made the demand of the Democratic Party would never have happened. So I'm really proud of that work, people pushing all over this country to make sure that it happened. I know for many folks, you know, no, certainly this is not the end all be all, John and Brooke. We understand that just because we were able to stop the superdelegates from putting their bodies on the scale, they can't vote on the first vote. They can't vote on the first ballot, so to speak. We know that more reform has to happen within the Democratic Party, but we do have to look at this as one step in the right direction. It is a victory. And as you just said, that in the caucus you know, caucuses, people have to wait all day sometimes, and they can't wait all day. Yeah. And to make it so that people can do an absentee ballot, to make it sure people can come in and vote, to make the caucus process more democratic is a beautiful thing. So we should celebrate our wins, not rest on our laurels, know that we have many more miles to go. We need to do things in states like New York, where New York is totally controlled by Democrats, yeah. for example, where you have to register almost a year in advance to be able to vote in a race. That doesn't make any kind of sense at all. So we're going to continue to work to make the Democratic Party more open, more transparent, more accountable, and certainly more democratic. But I am very excited. You know, I want to shout out the Bernie 8 that served on the Unity Reform Commission, our very own Larry Cohen, who's the chair of the Our Revolution Board. You may remember him, John and Brooke. He was the president of the CWA, the Communications Workers of America. He was the co-chair on the Unity Reform Commission, and he did a tremendous job. Yeah. We had to whip votes. None of that stuff happened by accident. It happened on purpose, and it happened because the people demanded more, and we must keep demanding. We can't rest on this. This is only one step of the process.
Well, I could not agree more. Nina Turner, thank you so much for joining the Damage Report. Please don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you back on.
Well, thank you, John, and thank you, Brooke.
Thank you.
Thank you. And of course, you can download Nina's podcast, We the People, on the TYT Audio Network. A bunch of great guests already on the episode she's already filmed, and obviously much more to come. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're joined by James Cromwell, actor, environmental activist. We're going to be breaking down what's been going on in this country over the last year, that and more for you after this. So my hope is that by the time we get some sane politicians in office, there will still be an environment left to protect. And along that way, we're joined now on the show by one of the men, an activist who's been working to protect that environment. This is James Cromwell, actor, environmental activist. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you is that California is close to passing a bill which aims to create a situation of 100% renewable energy production inside of California within the next couple of decades. It's not quite done yet, and there's still a lot of work that would have to be done to actually achieve that goal once the law is passed. But as a longtime activist, how do you greet news of a bill like that?
Of course, it's great news. And of course, it's California, and California is ahead of the rest of the nation, except Hawaii got there first.
Yes.
The problematic part of it is in our trial, when we were arrested for blocking the entryway to this power plant that's in my community called CPV, Tony Ingraffia, one of the preeminent environmentalists and global warming experts, indicated to the court in his testimony that we had between 4 and 6 years to turn this around. But he has since that reevaluated this, and he now says we have 2 years at most. Now, if you're going to try to accomplish this through a legislative process with all the planning that needs to go and all the resistance that you get from the power elites who have bought the politicians who make these decisions, then I think you're going to work too slow. We have to work faster than that. And that is electing people to government that will do the bidding of the American people that voted them in and not the donors that gave them the money to get there.
I couldn't agree more. And while I'm excited about bills like that, I see all these roadmaps, yeah. both for international and national, you know, efforts to stop climate change. All of them are 30, 50, 70-year plans. Many of them include a heavy reliance on natural gas along the way, which, as we know, is far worse, you know, for the climate than carbon dioxide. So I guess you've laid out a potential path. How much hope do you have that we will actually walk that path?
Well, you have to have hope. If you don't have hope, it gets to be really grim. I mean, that's one of the problems with the presentation of the global warming problem, is that major corporate media has basically banned the word global warming and climate change because they claim that when they have programs about these issues, they're so depressing, the news is so negative that their ratings go down.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when a report comes out, as the recent one did, Hot House Earth, and it comes out and states what our problem is and how quickly we have to adjust, they tend to blow it out of proportion. I can't quite decide why they do that, except to terrify everybody and drive everybody into a panic.
Yeah.
There are things, most experts agree that there are things that we could do right away. We did this when the chips were down during World War II. We've had a planned economy instead of an open free market, which mandated certain approaches to our use of resources, what products were produced, how much was produced, and to what effect. And if we don't do that right away, if we don't get politicians to get on this, then we will basically lose the opportunity.
Well, you know, so you point out the way that they tend to report on things like this. I think part of the problem is that the average person in the media knows absolutely nothing about the science behind climate change, which leads them to not want to talk about it in the first place because they don't understand it. And when they do, they either wildly exaggerate or misstate the science. So I'm curious, though, you've worked with a number of politicians in your activism. Are there people out there right now in politics that you think are good on this issue, that understand the challenge that we face and are actually working to face it?
There are many more than the major media will give you an idea that exist. That's why I listen to the Young Turks, because that's where you hear about the people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you hear about what Bernie, most people who are in the progressive part of the Democratic Party or trying to take the Democratic Party back from the neoliberals that control it right now are aware of what is at stake, aware at what the policies that have to be adopted if we're going to really handle this, and are committed. And that's what we need. We need more and more committed, not only on a federal level, but on a state level. I'm working, you had a wonderful woman on, Pramila Malik. There's a Cynthia Nixon, an erstwhile progressive who talks about the corruption in New York that led to the competitive power venture plant that's here in Wayweyanda, but she refuses to talk about CPV. She talked about her cocoa, but she's not talking about what needs to be done, which is to shut this plant down, which was only made possible by the corruption of the Cuomo administration.
Yeah.
So it takes everybody to understand, because it's nuanced, but it's also intersectional. It involves every issue, political corruption, an understanding of the science, an understanding of political will, a willingness to tell the truth, to speak truth to power. All of these things have to be galvanized in a direction by people who understand what's at stake.
And if anyone watching this would like to see our interview with Pramila Malik from last week, that's now up on YouTube. And her election is coming up actually very soon. And she seems like exactly one of the sorts of politicians that you're talking about.
She is.
So I do want to ask you one thing. So the point of this show is to address the real threats facing us and then give people something they can actually do about it. So as someone who's worked in this area, you've been an activist, someone who cares about the environment, who's watching this show, what is something that you would advise them to go out and do that would actually help the situation?
Okay, first you have to inform yourself. You have to know what you're talking about. Then you know you have to know what's happening locally. How does it affect you? Because you need community support. Everybody has to be galvanized, and they get more committed when the issue is local, when it affects them, it affects their livelihoods, it affects their health and the health of their children and the health of their communities. That's first. Secondly, inform yourself about what people are offering as solutions. One of the things that we could transform, which very few climate scientists and environmentalists talk about, which is the agricultural sector.
Yes.
We cannot continue to raise and slaughter animals at the rate that we do, and the effect that it has on the environment, both in water use, the release of methane, energy. We have to change this. We also have to change our transportation system. Not that you can cut out diesel trucks, but must we have a centralized system which allows long haulage of produce instead of using local markets? People have got to develop. That is also a very comprehensive and multifaceted idea that has to be organized by people who understand the issue and then are committed to engaging the public and serving the public, informing the public and empowering the public to force our leaders to adopt a more sane and sensible plan towards what's happening to this climate.
James Cromwell, I want to thank you for joining our show, helping break down some of these issues, and also thank you for your advocacy.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to spotlight one of potentially the worst candidates running in this set of primaries after this. If you've been anxiously awaiting the third season of The Handmaid's Tale, you might not have to wait that much longer. Because we have a candidate, Mark Harris, who has won his Republican primary and is now the Republican candidate for Congress. Some of this information about his views on women and society have been out there for a month or two, and I have to admit, I just missed them, I guess. So I want to talk about them now. First, I want to show you an excerpt of a video. I believe Now This put this together. Take a look at what he thinks about the women folk.
God instructs all Christian wives to submit to their husbands. The message is not from your husband to submit. The message is from the Lord. You can rebel against that command. But just please understand, you're not rebelling against your husband when you do. You are rebelling against the Lord.
The only way that I know that that's not a scene from an upcoming episode of The Handmaid's Tale is his suit isn't nice enough. But the message is all the same. It's, hey, women, you know, all this like advancement and freedom and choice that you have, screw that. Some figure that I've, you know, I believe is there. You may not be able to see him. You can't ask him questions about what I'm saying. He says you should submit. And the thing is, it's so cowardly. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be one thing if a man was like, I'm going to make you submit. But they want that without having to actually take the blame for being misogynists. It's just the Lord. The Lord wants it.
Right. It's in the Bible. You know, follow your scripture. But what's fascinating to me and what I saw in the reactions to this, because like you said, it's been out for a while. A lot of us had no idea. Mm-hmm. This is not shocking. This kind of thing comes from behind. We literally saw this exact thing at Aretha Franklin's funeral just days mm-hmm. ago. This exact message that essentially says women are not as strong as men. They're not as important as men. Their number one duty is to help a man raise kids. You know yeah. what I mean? What has been fascinating, though, to me is that he didn't walk this back. Mm-hmm. Listen, politicians lie all the time.
And he's a congressional candidate. He's right. A religious figure.
They lie all the time. And so that's not, so it's surprising that there was no one really who was supportive of this. And even where he's from, there didn't seem to be a lot of people. I didn't find anybody. Maybe my timeline is a little strict, mm-hmm. but no one really supporting this. Everyone making fun of it, calling it Gilead, saying he watches too much Hulu. And he didn't walk this back at yeah. all.
No, essentially, he thinks that he can win based
yeah,
on this.
Yeah, specifically said, like, his rep said, you know, I stand by this. He stands by this.
Well, he thinks he can win, and he might be right. In America 2018, it's not impossible that this sort of message should actually work for him. Mm-hmm. He went on to say in a sermon, submission is not about inferiority in any way, any shape, and any form. It simply reflects a God-ordained function of things. And I want to thank him for saying that, because he made very clear, there are some people in our country that can only think through the lens of hierarchy. Everything moral, political, social, economic is about hierarchy. That men are above women, whites are above blacks, middle-aged are above both the young and the elderly, until you get to be elderly and then you think that's above middle-aged.
Immigrants don't matter, they're immigrants not human.
Immigrants aren't real people.
Right,
it
right.
is all about setting up strict hierarchies and then saying that this is simply the way things are supposed to be.
English is the chosen language. I mean, we can
English
keep
is
going.
Better than other languages.
Sorry.
Straight is better than homosexual. Right. Rich is better than poor. This comes out in their sermons. It comes out in their platforms. It is the union of religion and politics, and that is its one message. Hierarchy. And if you happen to be in one of the bad categories, the out categories, screw you. This country is not for you. And there are a lot of people in this country that support that sort of thinking, either because it benefits them, they are white, they are Christian, they are male, they are straight, or because it is simply far, far easier cognitively to think about the world in these ways, to not have to think about the relative advantages of certain people, what they've done, what they've accomplished, what they've said. It's simply the book says, the person says, this is the way things are, and so I will simply support this. And it creates an incredibly unjust system in every way imaginable.
And also, just to be fair to a lot of Christians, that what this isn't necessarily just textbook Christianity. What it is this manipulation of the scripture, manipulation of the Bible, and manipulation of Christianity and what you actually read in order to push these nasty policies. We have seen this. There is nowhere in the Bible that says black people are not as good of humans as white people. But when they were trying to integrate schools, what did you see on, you know, if you look back at any of those news interviews, there are people who say the Lord wants segregation. The Lord wants this. It's not in the Bible.
No.
It's this manipulation of Christianity to be used as a, you know, as a way to push really awful policies.
Yeah. By the way, if you are going to say that you have a text, as many groups do, you have the one text that says everything that needs to be said. Well, the limit to that, I guess, the downside is that then you have to stick by what's in the actual book.
Right.
You can't just make up stuff every decade. If situations change, you just change it up. I can check the book. I can run a control left search on that thing. It ain't in there, okay? But that's still what people are running their lives based on.
Hashtag it ain't in there.
I've read parts. Okay, so that's all the time that we have, unfortunately. We're going to be doing primary coverage tonight. By the way, we have all these ads telling you to review and rate our podcast on iTunes or wherever you do that. The ads are all well and good, but I'm actually asking you to do that. I am now fed on a daily basis by the increased number of reviews that we have, so please help deliver that for us. 5 stars, if possible. Thank you, Brooke, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for watching. We'll be back tomorrow with much, much more for you. Thank you for listening to the Damage Report podcast, the show covering the true threats facing our country and what you can actually do about them. You can support this free podcast by leaving us a review and giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening to it. Every review helps more people discover the show at no cost to you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.